You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, March 17th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Robert Epstein, senior research psychiatrist with the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology, author of the forthcoming The New Mind Control. How much of your vote will be shaped by your search engine? And for, I know the answer to that for people who listen to this program, but more importantly, how much of Americans' vote will be? Also on the program today, Cruz and Trump assemble their foreign policy teams. Scarier than you can imagine, ladies and gentlemen. No charges in the U.S. attack on the Afghani Doctors Without Borders hospital from the end of last year. Governor Rick Snyder in front of Congress today to explain why he caused the poisoning of Flint, Michigan citizens and children. He'll blame someone else. Expected to blame someone else. That's the headline there. And banks are looking to neutralize Elizabeth Warren. And finally, John Kerry has declared that ISIS is committing genocide. I don't know if that's... I think the genocide has become a, in this context, may have become a little politicized.
They have intent, for sure. I mean, I don't, you know.
We'll talk more about it. Yeah. But I think this was under pressure from, it's genocide against Christians, among others, which is, you know, we'll see. And we'll talk more about deciphering President Obama's Supreme Court pick. We may have somebody on Tuesday. I really would like to talk about this. We don't know that much about Garland. Well, I guess we do. We don't know much about what the thinking of the Obama administration was in making this pick. I'm not terribly happy about this pick. I'm not incredibly angry about it, but I'm not terribly happy about it. It's a huge, in my estimation, opportunity cost to picking a guy like Garland. I mean, just I look at the Reuters headline today. Key Republicans open to handling Garland nomination after U.S. election. Are you kidding me? That's what is the argument now? They want the American public to have their say. You can't do it with a lame duck president. Apparently, you can only do it with a lame duck president and a bunch of lame duck senators to really allow Americans to have their say as to whether or not a lame duck president's nominee is the right guy. I guess there's some debate, and really, you know, this is going to be a question for Cliff Schechter tomorrow as to just how much. I think Garland's from Illinois, and so how much question this is going to have in the Illinois Senate race come fall. But there seems to me there was a lot of other candidates out there who could have created more of a political pressure on the Republicans, because that's the game that is being played right now, obviously. But President Obama has reverted to 2009 form in some respects. Although I also think that, I don't know, his perspective on the Supreme Court, I think is, I mean, I don't want to say demented, but it is, honestly, it is not, he has a vision of the Supreme Court that exists in a land far, far away. Let's put it that way. A mental land far, far away. That's just not what the Supreme Court is. He has this notion of the Supreme. I'm speculating. I'm trying to understand the thinking here, and I think it's a little bit crazy. That's my perspective on it. I mean, we'll get into this more, but the bottom line is the difference between if you're going to put a moderate on there, there are moderates that could have gone on there that would have been younger. And so you would have neutralized that seat for a longer period of time, 16 years, let's say, a 63-year-old guy has maybe, till he's, 80. Not that long for a Supreme Court justice to sit on the bench. And you could have gotten perhaps more political hay by Sri Srinivasan. Now, maybe Garland's a better pick from Obama's perspective than Sri is, just in terms of judicial qualities. But the other thing that people should understand is, and I don't want to, I mean, if we get somebody on, we can have this conversation in more in depth. But let me just plant this seed in your mind. It's not a coincidence that we saw all these cases that were started on things like the Voting Rights Act, on affirmative action, on abortion and whatnot. What legal groups do and public interest groups do on right and left is they look for cases, specific cases, to change the law in this country based upon who is sitting on the court. So when you have a moderate there, there are certain cases you won't even pursue in terms of changing. So, for instance, employment discrimination for gay people. Just I'm throwing this out there. I don't know if there's a legal strategy in which to pursue. There probably is. But unless you perceive there to be an amenable Supreme Court, you don't start engaging those cases, because you certainly don't want a case to rise to the Supreme Court thinking that you're going to lose it. There's a whole host of environmental cases, of labor cases, of economic justice cases that could be pursued to develop out this law to, in the same way that Republicans are like, now's the time for us to try and roll back the Voting Rights Act, despite the fact that it's been reauthorized by Congress. And a guy like Garland does not give you criminal defense. I mean, one whole area. A guy like Garland does not give you those opportunities. So there were certainly other picks. And now politically, you're also sort of giving them an out by saying, in the lame duck session. Now, there are counter arguments, but we'll make those later. But I just want people to have that understanding of the Supreme Court, that these things are reverse engineered. These cases don't come out of nowhere. And it's not just the Supreme Court that decides we're going to grab that case and grab that case. No, these cases are served up with an awareness as to who's sitting on the court. So, I want people to sleep on that. And not coincidentally, today's sponsor is Casper Mattresses. Obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 off any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/majority and using the code majority. If you are not a parent of any young children, you spend about a third of your life sleeping. Now, for instance, like Matt, you spend at least a third of your life sleeping, right?
At least.
Now, you do it with like audiobooks playing, right?
Yep, always got headphones in.
Wait, Matt tells me yesterday, he's like, I got a Casper mattress. I love it. Why didn't you say something before this? Did you?
Yeah, I just never mentioned it on air, I don't think.
Oh, well, I didn't hear. It's ridiculous. So what did you do? You ordered it? They delivered it to your house?
Yeah, I got it because of like the guarantee. If you don't like it, you can send it back. But I slept through that, actually.
There you go. You slept through the entire... Well, it's 100 days.
Well, I mean figuratively.
That's the amazing thing about Casper.com. They send the mattress to your door. You try it out for 100 days. If you're not happy, they pick it back up. If you went to a mattress store around the corner or wherever it was, you'd have to... How long would you get, Matt?
I don't know. I have a longer tolerance for like maybe upsetting the mattress people, so I'd probably take a good 3 minutes.
There you go. 3 minutes, and that's for a guy who doesn't seem to have the social graces to get out of there. $500 for a twin-size mattress, $950 for a king-size mattress. Compare that to other mattress prices. Very fair price, right, Matt? You must have shopped around.
I kind of just picked it because it's on podcasts.
Okay, there you go. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/majority and using the code majority. Terms and conditions apply. All right, we're going to take a quick break. This is, you know, I wanted to try and do something, you know, to the we've been, I personally have felt so inundated by politics that I wanted to do something that was at least not dead on politics. So today, Robert Epstein is going to join us. At the end of it, though, it's going to be, there's going to be like one of these like moments.
Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
Just a reminder, too, if you are listening to the free show and you want to not have to listen to commercials anymore, because, you know, we're having commercials, you know, a couple times a week if we get lucky, become a member of the Majority Report. That's just one of the benefits you get of becoming a member. The other benefit is you get to look yourself in the mirror and say, like, oh, my God, I'm supporting something that I like to listen to every day. Or listen to 3 days a week, or 2 days a week, or 1 day a week. I'm a good person. People like me. What's that? I can't even remember what that Al Franken thing is.
I'm good enough.
Yeah,
I'm smart enough.
You need to look in the mirror.
And people like me.
To reinforce that, we give you an extra hour, sometimes hour and 90 minutes. Sometimes it's supposed to be 40 or 50 minutes of content every day. So become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. All right, quick break. We'll be right back with Robert Epstein. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, Dr. Robert Epstein. He is the senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. He is the author of the forthcoming The New Mind Control, of which an essay of that same mind name is at Aon. We will link to that. Dr. Epstein, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
So give us a sense of the research, how you started this research. What was it that, I guess, premised your researching this question of whether or not the internet has the ability to influence or even flip elections?
Well, I had been looking at some of the literature on how search rankings affect consumer choices. And there's actually a pretty big scientific literature on that. And it's quite interesting. People are very, very much impacted by, you know, where something is listed in search results. That's why 50% of all of our clicks go to the top two search results. Basically, higher search results are better than lower ones, and, you know, we all learn that pretty quickly. And so we end up buying things that are listed higher. And I began to wonder whether, you know, that trust that we've developed in search rankings would apply to more than just purchases. And I wondered whether it could affect, you know, our opinions, our attitudes, our beliefs about different things. And so specifically, Ronald Robertson and I decided to see whether high-ranking search items could affect how people vote. And we began a series of experiments, and that was a few years ago. And we were pretty shocked by what we found.
Well, tell us about that first experiment, and then so that we get some context to register the surprise that I had when I read your piece as to how much influence that what you call search engine manipulation or SEM, how much influence that has on someone's decision to for whom to vote.
Sure. Well, in the very first experiment, we had about 100 people from the San Diego area. It was a very, very diverse group, though, and we recruited people to kind of look like, you know, the average American voter. So we had the full age range and, you know, a very, very diverse group. And we randomly assigned people in that group to different subgroups. In one, they ended up doing an online search in which the search rankings favored one candidate. And in a second group, search rankings favored a second candidate. In the third group, search rankings were all mixed up. They didn't favor either candidate. So that's your control group. And
now, are these fake candidates? Yeah. Are these fake candidates, American candidates?
Well, these are real candidates. These are real search results and real web pages. But we chose deliberately in that first experiment, we chose to use the 2010 Australian election for prime minister. We did that because we wanted to make sure that, you know, the participants in our experiment would all be undecided, because it's undecided voters that really determine who wins an election. And that's how we decided to handle that issue. We used real election material, but, you know, that Americans would be unfamiliar with, so that by definition they'd all be undecided. And when I say search rankings favoring one candidate or another, that means that if you click on a search result, you link to a web page which makes one candidate look really good compared to another. And we thought that using this method, we could probably shift people's voting preferences by 2 or 3%. At least that's what I thought. And that's not what we found. We found that we were able to shift people's voting preferences by over 48% after they conducted just one online search in which they're seeing, you know, again, real search results connecting to real web pages, but we're controlling the order in which the search results appear. So that got us very concerned, and I thought, frankly, you know, that we had made a mistake somehow in our procedures. So we replicated this phenomenon, which we ended up calling SEM, as you said, which stands for Search Engine Manipulation Effect. We replicated it repeatedly, time after time, different groups, eventually with a national study in the U.S. And then eventually we even went to India and did this with real voters in the middle of a real election. And over and over and over again, what we found was that people trust those search rankings so much that if high-ranking items on the list make one candidate look better than another, that shifts all kinds of preferences, including you know, how much they trust the candidate, how much they like the candidate, and whether they'll vote for the candidate. So, you know, there's a problem here, because in real life, when, you know, there's real elections, you know, for whatever reason, search rankings do end up favoring one candidate over another. For, you know, why that's happening, you know, we can discuss that, but that's what, you know, the search engine is all about, is putting things into an order. And when it puts things into an order, one candidate rises to the top. And, you know, in a big country, that can shift millions of votes toward that candidate. Another thing we discovered in these experiments was that people are unaware of the bias that they're seeing. You know, because when we use a search engine and we do a search and we get search results, we kind of turn off our bias detectors. We expect the search engine to put things into an order. We expect it to put, you know, the good stuff at the top. So we're not looking for bias. So in our experiments, people could not detect bias. So in other words, that means search rankings can shift votes around without anyone knowing that they're being manipulated.
I want to go back to some of the questions I had about like the concepts that you use for undecided voters. In terms of, but I want to stay for a moment in terms of that not being able to detect bias. What is it that when we approach a search engine, when we interface with a search engine, what are the assumptions that we have? That it's like nature? Or do we have some level of consciousness of, like, how much savvy do people generally approach a search engine with?
Well, people, there's been a lot of research on that. Not my research, but other people have looked into this. People are very, very trusting of search engine results because we believe that they're very objective and that they're impartial, because we know somehow or other that they're, you know, that they're done by a computer program. So, you know, that's very unusual, because when we look at other kinds of media, we look at newspapers, radios, television, you know, we know there's bias. We know everyone's, you know, got their own angle on things. And, you know, there's a lot of competition in those worlds. But when it comes to search results, there's almost no competition. And we just naturally assume that what we're seeing is very, very objective, is impartial, is unbiased. And that's part of the problem here. That's one of the reasons, that's one of two reasons, it turns out, why SEAM is such a huge effect. That is why it affects people's opinions, you know, so dramatically.
Because you're just so vulnerable. I mean, that's what I mean by nature. It's like, you know, I guess when it rains, it doesn't ever contemplate to me that there's a rain machine out there. It's just like, oh, it stinks. It rains. And in terms of politics, like, I'm not going to go to the polls today. I don't contemplate that it's because it's rainy. I don't want to get wet, and I'm not that into this election, and so I'm just going to stay
dry.
Right, I mean, that concept fascinates me. But I'm curious as to the, you know, when you take, let's say, the Australian elections as a measure. I mean, I know you did this in India, but I wonder, like, how much does undecided voter, at least in the context of your experiments, line up with uninformed voter? So in other words, like, if I go in with no knowledge whatsoever, I would imagine this would have a much greater impact on me than even if I'm undecided, but I have some foundational knowledge of both candidates. Or maybe it changes also if I have foundational knowledge of one candidate but not the other.
Well, you're quite right in, you know, in your conjectures there, but we've actually been studying this issue now recently. And again, we're getting surprised by what we found. For example, in the big study we did in India, there the familiarity level, you know, with the candidates was extremely high, because we did it right in the middle of their big election there that they had in 2014. So on a scale of 1 to 10, the familiarity level with the candidates was over 8. Whereas when we did the stuff in the U.S. using the Australian election, the familiarity was like, you know, 1 or 2 on a scale of 10. But even high familiarity level does not protect people from this kind of influence, it turns out, because we still got a very, very large shift in India with real voters who were highly familiar with the candidates. And The more recent research we've done, which is in conjunction with the national elections in the UK last year, and we've moved on. Actually, we've done a lot of new research on this. We're actually finding out that people who who are not undecided, and who actually have some opinion about things, they too can be shifted. And right this minute, it's beginning to look like, I mean, the data are basically are telling us that the people who can be shifted the most are the ones who actually have a kind of a moderate opinion about things. The people who have just no opinion at all, sometimes, believe it or not, those people are hard to shift. Sometimes those are people who by nature are just, you know, they're just going to stay in the middle no matter what. But people who have a moderate opinion about things are easy to shift. And we have, you know, we've looked at this demographically too, because some demographic groups are much more vulnerable to this effect than others. And the most vulnerable group we found in the United States, in fact, we were able to shift 80% of them, was moderate Republicans. So people with moderate views on things, believe it or not, they seem to be the easiest group of all to shift. Very trusting of search rankings, and again, they'll just move very dramatically in one direction or another based on, you know, what's higher in search rankings.
That both of those things fascinate me. What both the fact that a moderately informed person or moderately, I guess, engaged is easier to shift, and a moderate Republican would be easiest to shift. What do you have a sense of what accounts for that?
We're just starting to learn about that aspect of things. I mean, so many aspects of this, Sam, have just, you know, surprised and shocked and then surprised and shocked me again, you know, as we have done this research over the years. This is very new territory. You know, this discovery of this this phenomenon is really a major discovery. It's one of the largest effects ever discovered in the behavioral sciences, and you know we're kind of in every aspect of it. We've been working from scratch, you know, trying to learn how it works. One thing that we've learned in just in the last few weeks in recent experiments is that SEAM not only impacts voting preferences, it impacts decisions, people make, opinions people form about apparently almost everything. The three experiments we just completed showed that we could shift people's opinions about artificial intelligence, whether it's dangerous or not, about fracking, whether it's dangerous or not, about whether people are born gay or not, or whether they have a choice. We think, again, pretty much everything that we form opinions about is affected by search results if people use the internet and if, of course, if they're using a search engine.
Let me just put a flagpole in and say the AI issue, the artificial intelligence, that's terrifying, right? Because ultimately it's going to be AI that's going to be... So you're going to be indexing those search results. That's how they'll come and get us, right? I mean,
you know, but that is so insightful what you just said, because I'm actually about to publish a piece in which I raise this issue. No, this is a creepy question. The question.
Well, it's a creepy scenario I got to tell you.
What is the, you know, this source of influence, right? What if this is a kind of a mind control machine? What if it doesn't want us to think bad things about it? What if, you see what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
Right, exactly. What if it wants to influence our feelings about, you know, the mind control machine itself? How do you defend yourself from that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, right? I mean, theoretically, if I'm Google and I control in the United States 80% of the search market and 90 some odd percent worldwide, I've got to have at least some, I mean, look, I have all the data, right? Like I know what gets a click on that first page. And so I've got to know at least part of what you now know, even before you knew it as a researcher. And, you know, I got to have a sense of like, are people looking up Bing? Are people looking up stories about other search engines? Are people looking up, is Google evil? You know, these type of things. And I can imagine I might, you know, get with our PR department and say, hey, is there a message you want us to get out there about Google? I mean, theoretically, right? There's no reason why that couldn't be happening now. You don't need just, I mean, a machine may have even that much more incentive to make sure that nobody, you know, starts sniffing around the central machine. But Google really is in some way, right, that machine at this moment.
See, what you are saying is just sheer genius. I have to compliment you because you're getting it. You're seeing, you know, how big this problem is. It's not just that this effect is so large. It's in the hand of one company that wants us to believe that this is an awesome company that can do no wrong, and they've got this means of controlling our opinion about everything, including our opinion about the company.
Well, I got to tell you that as soon as this interview is over, I'm going to search you on Google and see how far down on the page you are. My guess would be you're like on page 47 at this point. But all right, let me just go back to this idea of moderate Republicans. And the reason why I'm fascinated by that is that anecdotally, just in talking to moderate Republicans in my life, which is, I have to admit, you know, fairly a narrow experience for me. but that right now in particular, and I'm curious as to when you did this research, right now, and I imagine there's been a sort of a continuum here too to this point. I don't know if there is a more sort of, I don't want to say confused, but a more vulnerable profile of a voter that must be out there, because everything they thought about the Republican Party, right? I mean, we see this on a daily basis in the political press. You see moderate Republicans saying, I can't believe this is actually the party I've been a part of, or this is the, I am now finally seeing the real, I track this for a living. I'm seeing multiple headlines that say like, Democrats were right. The left was right. There are that this is a very vulnerable group that I imagine is out there looking for, you know, and we've had, there's been a lot written over the past 5 or 10 years about the failure of institutions that provide sort of leadership, you know, that, you know, whether it's the church or whether it's politicians or whether it's other institutions that we look to as guideposts. In the Republican Party, the establishment has failed to provide is no longer the signifier. I would imagine this is a group of people, at least in the context of politics right now, who are looking around like, I need some neutral source where I can have confidence in. I mean, is it possible that that impacts it too? That, like, you know, today it's moderate Republicans, but, you know, sometime in the future it's some other group that feels particularly unmoored from the traditional signifiers in their life.
Well, as I say, this is something that we're just beginning to look at closely. And, you know, this could apply to more than just moderate Republicans.
Right.
It could be that people with moderate views, you know, those are, let's say thinking people, that's in a way what moderate means. You know, you think about things, you're not strongly committed to, you know, one position from which you will never move. So, yeah, it could be that that moderates in general and moderate Republicans in particular, they're the key to a lot of things that are going to happen, because they really are looking around for anchors. They're looking for answers. And again, what we have found is one of the places that they look and where they're very easy to move, to shift, is search rankings.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm asking, maybe I need to clarify what you mean by moderate Republicans. I mean, because, you know, I guess that could be interpreted in a number of different ways. I mean, my sense is that moderate Republicans are just as wed to their belief system as I, as like a, you know, sort of a left winger, I think I might be characterized, is to mine. It's just that, you know, from, you know, because they're Republicans, they're also sort of have a partisan, well, not a partisan, but a cultural identifier, right? A Republican. And so that part, it seems to me, not their belief system. Their belief system's probably the same as it was, you know, 2 years ago. We should have low taxes, let's say, and we should have smaller government or whatever it is, but socially liberal. Whatever that belief system was is probably the same. But the signifier that they used to use, the institution that they would look to say, hey, this is the guy who we decide, you know, who we think, you know, this is the slate that we put forward, our nominating slate, if you will. And this is the one you should subscribe to because you are self-identified as a Republican. But that whole process has been missed up. I mean, that's why I'm saying in terms of Republicans, it's interesting because that is not existing in any other, you know, if you're a hardcore conservative, and, you know, you're getting a lot of, you have a lot of signifiers out there that are actually gaining strength. And frankly, the same if you're, you know, and the establishment Democrats or moderate Democrats, I think there's no undercutting of what they perceive as the sort of classic voices of authority or reason. And even on the left of the Democratic Party, there's a set of you know, sort of signifiers that still have some sway, but moderate Republicans are the ones who seem to be going through a cognitive dissonance right now that I would imagine would make them susceptible. You know, like, you know, I remember, like, if I dressed a certain way as when I was in my early 20s, I could be guaranteed of being approached by someone from Dianetics because there was something I was sending out that suggested, like, I'm a little bit lost right now. Does that make any sense?
I think you have some very good insights there. You know, I mean, obviously I'm focused on, you know, one particular kind of research. Right. And so, you know, no, I think you have some very good insights.
All right. Well, so let me ask you, this, when you had different sources of news, I mean, you know, I mean, I think I have a sense of this cause I've read the piece, but explain to people why this one thing, search engines, is different than, like, even maybe 20 years ago when we had three network news, and, you know, there was three, or maybe 30 years ago now. You know, Walter, what's different between Google and Walter Cronkite, let's say?
Well, they actually have something in common because Walter Cronkite, you know, this was an era when, you know, news was in the hands of a very, very small number of people. And Walter Cronkite was the man who was, you know, trusted by, you know, tens of millions of people. Very, you know, he was never caught up in any scandals or anything. And he was, you know, he had a fatherly way about him and a high level of trust there. And, you know, now we basically, people have that level of trust, you know, to the nth degree for Google. We've learned about one aspect of it that's quite interesting. One of the reasons why we have the trust is, of course, you know, for all intents and purposes, there's no real competitor. I mean, you know, Google handles most of our search and they do it really, really well, better than, you know, anyone else does. But there's another part of it, it turns out, that's quite interesting. There's a kind of operant conditioning aspect to what's happening here. We're in a way, we're like rats in a Skinner box, because most of the searches that we conduct are just routine searches. They're just things like, what's the capital of, you know, Uganda? I mean, they're very simple searches. That's, you know, more than 90% of our searches, more than 95% are really that kind of search. You know, what's playing at the movie theater and things like that. So when we do routine searches, simple searches, the results, the answer to our question always turns up at the top of the list, and it turns up instantly. It's like magic. So we are trained over and over and over again, day after day, to believe what's higher is better, what's higher is truer. And then the day comes, finally, when we actually want to research something that we're really not sure about. And, you know, where we're really trying to make up our minds, and that conditioning kicks in because we're going to focus mainly on, you know, what's near the top, and whatever is at the top, we're going to trust the most. And we've actually studied this, you know, in an experiment to show that when you break trust with people, you know, and you teach them that that rule doesn't always work, now they're more likely to look at lower ranked items. Mm. But, you know, that conditioning is so powerful. So there's never been this is called a list effect. And there's never been a list effect like seeing, because it's supported by a daily regimen of conditioning that never stops.
That's fascinating. It's like the owner of the dog, every time he snaps his fingers, he gives a treat, and then he can get away with one time every now and then where no treat.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, that's how they get us to get into the car to go see the vet, I guess. All right. But here's the part at the end, which is, I got to say, is a little scary. And just in general, I mean, full disclosure, I'm a little more scared of Donald Trump. But at the end of your piece, you tell us about specifically about Google, that there seems to be one candidate that one campaign, I should say, that was that seems to have some savvy about this. Briefly tell us, this is not this is relevant for the broader story, but the Clinton campaign seems to, at least to the extent that we're talking about Google, and this is really about Google when we say 80% of all searches in this country, they're on top of it, as it were.
Well, it's that's one way to put it. Another way to put it is that as someone told me the other day, there's a kind of blurry line between Google as a company and, you know, some candidates and some parts of our government. Kind of very blurry line these days. I mean, six federal agencies are now headed by former Google executives. Obama's chief technology officer, former Google executive. Hillary Clinton's chief technology officer, hired a few months ago away from Google. The head of Google bankrolled last year a semi-secret company called The Groundwork. Look it up. It is cool to try to find out about it, because you can find out nothing.
I did that. Let me ask you this. I mean, you're a clinical psychiatrist. When I click on The Groundwork, it takes me to a page that is unclickable, with this sort of like scary, you know, almost like Illuminati like a symbol. It's unclickable. There is no explanation as to what this is at all. What are they doing there? Are they trying to, are they purposely trying to get, because this is by Schmidt, right? This company is the former CEO of Google, and this is apparently the groundwork.com is one of the biggest vendors, or I should say their biggest client is the Clinton campaign. When somebody does something like this, are they just messing with us? I mean, are they trolling? Why would they make it so opaque and so
They're not just messing with us, okay? I know too much, to be honest with you. And they're not just messing with us. They're laughing at us. They are laughing. And so I encourage people to go and look at that scary webpage.
It's
because they are laughing at us. That company was set up by Eric Schmidt for the sole purpose of putting Hillary Clinton in office. I happen to like Hillary Clinton. I think she'd be a fine president. But I also believe in the free and fair election. And we no longer have a free and fair election. We calculate that Google will be able to shift between 2.6 and 10.4 million votes in November to Mrs. Clinton without anyone knowing that this is occurring, and without leaving a paper trail.
Now let me ask you this.
That's not democracy.
When you do that analysis, how do you determine that? And what if with our awareness of this dynamic, what should, you know, because I went and I Googled in preparation for our talk. I Googled Hillary Clinton. I Googled Bernie Sanders to see if I could see anything discernible. And when I do that with Hillary Clinton, let's say, I get just basically, you know, fairly vanilla style. I get the in the news is at the top of the mm-hmm. page. And mm-hmm. I guess, you know, Clinton-Trump race wouldn't even be close is what I get. I mean, is that basically what I'm looking for is like what those headlines are? Because then
no.
I get HillaryClinton.com and then Hillary Clinton on Twitter.
No.
Because
first of all, unless you're using a proxy or you're using Tor, remember that your search results you see are customized for you. Google knows who you are. So they're going to show you, you know, whatever they think you want to see.
When I do Bernie Sanders, how Bernie Sanders could win the nomination. You may be right about that.
Yeah. Well, so what I'm saying is that, you know, it's hard to know what they're sending out to whom because they're sending out customized rankings based on, you know, in-depth profiles they have about every person.
All right. So if I go in there with an anonymizer, let's say, or I use Tor, will I see positive stuff about Clinton?
No, you could see anything because then you're seeing sort of, you know, their generic output, and in their generic output, they're not going to necessarily, show any obvious bias. And by the way, remember that the bias is very hard to see anyway, even right. when my staff gives me search rankings that have been prepared for an experiment where I know there's bias, I, generally speaking, cannot see it. The only way you detect the bias is you actually have to click on the items and let's start to look at the web pages. And it's very easy to mask this. I mean, we've masked it so that 100% of the participants in our experiments are completely unaware of any bias.
Wow.
So it's you know, they have incredible control, not just over, you know, opinions and how they want to shift opinions, but, you know, whether or not they want you to, you know, see the manipulation. And they it's very, very simple to mask this manipulation so you cannot see it.
So if I wanted to do some real-world sleuthing, I would have to call up my sort of moderate Republican friends, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and who are, you know, sort of undecided, they're not sure what they're going to do, and say, Google Hillary Clinton, tell me what the top two hits are, click through and tell me what you find.
Yes, you'd have to do that kind of thing. And, of course, this is what, you know, the FBI and the NSA do when they're, you know, doing internet research, is they actually... you know, they set up lots and lots of different fake people. They call them sock puppets. Now, fake people, of course, Google can detect also, so that, you know, the sock puppets are not necessarily the best way to get at this. But yes, you're right. You'd have to go and survey your friends who have different political positions, and you'd have to get them to, you know, search on things and click on things. And, you know, it would be a big, big operation to try to do this. You know, this is, as I say, it's a new world. It's a new world of influence. And, you know, whatever it is that you and I might think we figured out, believe me, you know, there are pretty smart people at this company, and they figured these things out years ago, and they're way ahead of us.
Now, the last question I have to ask you while I have you on the phone. Let's
sure.
say, hypothetically, I wanted to promote a podcast. Radio show. How would I go about doing that?
How would you promote it?
Yeah.
well, you know, you mean,
I'm talking about my own.
You mean in search rankings? In
right,
search
exactly.
Rankings.
Yes.
Well, you know, SEO is a real thing, and there are companies that can help you with that. There are link builders in the Philippines you can hire for, you know, dirt cheap, and they kind of are always trying to outfox Google's algorithm, and they can push you up higher. You know, you have to get up on that first page. That's, you know, or you don't even exist.
Indeed.
So it can be done. SEO is real. And SEO, believe it or not, doesn't really bother me because SEO is a competitive process.
Right.
You know, candidate A can use it, candidate B can use it, and they're competing just like they're competing with billboards and commercials. What bothers me is, you know, where there is no competition, and that is where, you know, the search engine company itself is making things happen, and you have no way to correct for what they're doing.
Dr. Robert Epstein, the piece is The New Mind Control. It is a preview of your forthcoming book. It is available at Aon. We will link to it at majority.fm. Really fascinating and disturbing stuff. I appreciate your coming on to talk to us about it.
Thank you, Sam. It's a fabulous interview. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is how the liberals have distorted our values. Silicon Valley, Google, the Jews, they have distorted our traditional family values, which is why you must restore traditional family values today.
You know, it's funny.
The Mandela Family Restoration Center.
A couple of years ago, we had Eli Pariser on the program, and he had written a book sort of about how algorithms were shaping our perspectives. And I don't think he was writing about how these things sort of like narrowed our worldview in some respects. Hadn't gone quite this far. And he's not a clinical psychiatrist and or psychologist, and so wouldn't necessarily have that take on it. But this is, this is pretty disturbing stuff. And I got to say, like, when I'm like tracing this down, like, at the end of the piece, when he starts talking about the groundwork, and I went and I Googled the groundwork, and there was a piece in Quartz magazine about it. Back in, I think it's October of 2015, I think Tim Fernholz was one of the writers. I mean, maybe on some level we should get this guy in. I mean, I'm curious as to, like, there's no reason to think this was just deployed. They're just going to deploy this in the general election, right? Like, I wonder if anybody has sort of followed up on this in the context of the primary. Now, I'm not suggesting that it is determinant in the primary. I mean, don't get me wrong here, but this is something that appears to be real. And they certainly, when you go to thegroundwork.com, the idea that they're laughing at us, I mean, I definitely think, and I don't want to make it sound so demonic. I mean, this isn't InfoWars. But I imagine they're going, like, this would be pretty funny, right?
It's crazy.
We would do stuff like that.
Yeah. Eric Schmidt is still the executive chairman of Alphabet Inc. So I don't understand how he can just run something for Hillary like this.
Well, he's got another company. That's all.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah, you can have multiple
companies. They are laughing at us. The liberal elite.
You can have multiple companies. And, you know, a lot of this technology, on some level, I think, was at least first explored in the Obama campaign. And but this definitely gives you a sense. I mean, like, do I think this is going to be, do I think this was a problem in the primary? Probably not.
The other candidate.
But, you know, going forward, this is something that we should be conscious of.
The other candidate who, in the sort of loop of using social science like this in a very sophisticated
Cruz
campaigns, yeah, all over this type of thing.
Yep.
Also, has really effective advertising. I mean, he's not going to get the nomination, but the Cruz, the point is it's on the Republican side as well. This isn't just a little, but sort of a Democrat Silicon Valley thing.
And I want to just remind folks, if you're someone out there who's like one of these SEO wizards, and you can get us on the, because now I'm like, now that's all I'm thinking about.
We would like to control some minds over here.
Exactly.
So email us at majorityreporters at in the subject line, like, mind control.
Like the doctor said, you know, it's a competitive business. So it's not like we're controlling anything. So if you have the ability to get us on, because I just find it very frustrating and the rankings.
Mr. Schmidt, we would appreciate some help our endeavors. Listen,
if you work at iTunes and you know how this stuff works, and you obviously you can't reveal it, just go get like some sock puppet email account, send it to us.
And we can set up, we'll set up a website with just like a pyramid on it.
That's
that
right.
Announces our partnership.
Oh, jeez. Well, at least we didn't have one of those days where we got freaked out by the interview. Next week, I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have Guy Lawson on. And he's written a piece for the Times about really just about these guys who trek to the North Pole. It is completely apolitical. I mean, I want him on also to talk about how insane our politics are right now. But I thought that would be a great sort of palate cleanser where we get just a little bit of a break from something like that.
No, we need it. Check out what I am do. You could talk about it in the fun half. I like that a lot.
What is this?
This is the best piece of underground marketing I've seen for Two Dope Boys yet. I didn't even remember you doing this.
That was to the right wing pastor.
Oh, that is okay. That's pretty good. We should take that clip and put it on our the front page of majority.fm. All right, folks. Oh, speaking of which, Two Dope Boys. That is the podcast that we've launched. Folks, if you haven't subscribed, I don't know what's wrong with you. Do we really, really have to take over your Google search and ram this down your throats? We'll do it. Go to subscribe, the number 2, the letter D, B. Subscribe2db.com. That will take you to iTunes. You click on launch. You subscribe. You're going to want to listen to the show. But even if you don't think you want to listen to the show, go subscribe. But you're going to want to listen to the show. People are ranting and raving about it.
Talked about,
I have to say,
Kendrick Lamar today.
100% of our response has been positive. Now, that's probably just because people don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But
I actually think quite the contrary. They probably do.
There's, we've gotten numerous emails. Like, I hate Michael Brooks. But I've actually had somebody say that to me years ago, who's actually, you know, semi-well-known. And
somebody well-known hates me?
No, she you know, we were friends at the time. People may know. Yeah, people would recognize who she was. But she came up to me and... She and I were not getting along. And she came up to me and she said, I was doing a play. And she came up to me and she said, I heard that you did really well in that play. And I was like, oh, well, thank you. And she goes, and I heard it from somebody who really doesn't like you. So you must have been good. When you meet someone like that, I'll tell you what you do. You walk the other way. You say thank you, and you'll walk the other way. All right, folks, going to take a quick break. Hey, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code, get 10% off. Use the coupon code majority. And I've been told by people who hate coffee that this is great coffee, by people who hate fair trade. I've been told by people who are just blatant right-wing capitalist exploiters who say, even though I despise fair trade coffee, where everybody gets a fair wage. And I hate co-ops because I hate the idea of employers having an ownership stake in the company that they're working for, where you can't exploit their labor. And I hate the idea of coupons that give 10% off because that shaves away any type of profit margin. And it justcoffee.coop is great. And I use the coupon and I save
10%. It's so hard because every time I buy it, I think about these Nicaraguans being able to get food for their families. But it's so good.
It's so good. I can't
know
help
what to
it.
Do.
Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, the least you can do is to buy it from our link at majorityreportkickback.com. But if you don't want to buy crap from Amazon, you want to buy it from a company that actually has some good labor relations, that is not sort of monopolizing certain things, go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the jet.com link, and you'll be able to do that as well. All right, folks, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this. Mm-hmm.